Thank you for being with Ozarks at Large for this Tuesday, April 27th, 2021 show on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. We are a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This afternoon, we begin a preview of an Honors College series of classes that will begin next month. The classes are devoted to the vaccines designed to battle COVID-19 and all of their implications. First class in the two-week series will focus on vaccinations, medical care, and social justice and equity. That conversation with one of the instructors, Kevin Fitzpatrick, in just a few minutes. And in our second half hour, how art therapy is being extended to nurses who've been working day and night during the pandemic. After Ozarks, on Here and Now, the story of Williams Jones III, who wanted to see more black runners when he moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, so he founded one of the most diverse running clubs in the country. That story, today's news and more on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston, beginning at 1. Arkansas lawmakers are adopting a third proposed constitutional amendment to put before voters on the 2022 ballot. Members of the House State Agencies and Governmental Affairs Committee yesterday approved Senate Joint Resolution 14, known as the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment. The amendment's House co-sponsor, Republican Representative Jimmy Gasaway of Paragould, says it is intended to enshrine the free exercise of religion in the state constitution.
I'm not sure that this will stop federal overreach necessarily, but it is important that we make a strong statement in our state constitution. You may see things at the local level of attempts to exercise free exercise of religion. And of course, if we have it in our state constitution, it would be a strong barrier to those types of infringements.
The proposal now goes to the full House for a vote. Lawmakers have also proposed an amendment allowing the legislature to call a special session without the governor's approval, and a proposal requiring a higher vote threshold for proposed amendments to the state constitution. A bill that would have replicated the state's current Confederate Flag Day with Arkansas Day fell one vote short from passing through a Senate committee yesterday. By a vote of 4-3, with one member not voting, the Senate State Agencies and Governmental Affairs Committee did not advance the bill. It would have replaced the existing holiday with one that, according to the legislation, would have promoted the state's history, national treasures, and diverse cultures. 11 people spoke against the bill during the public testimony phase, with many saying the removal of Confederate Flag Day is disrespectful to those soldiers and racist history. Republican Senator Bob Ballinger of Ozark told attendees it was their responsibility to teach or preserve history, and they would have that ability under an Arkansas Day. The Arkansas Department of Health reports a jump of 18 patients in Arkansas hospitals during the last 24-hour testing cycle, a total of 170 people in COVID units. Other numbers reported yesterday by the ADH are modest or indicate a decline, 63 new cases and 117 fewer active cases in the state. Two more deaths have been reported in the last 24 hours. Governor Asa Hutchinson is scheduled to host his weekly press briefing about the state's response to coronavirus this afternoon at 1:30. KUAF will air that briefing live. The Arkansas Razorback softball team, ranked 6th in the nation, will head into the final conference series of the regular season with a victory. Last night, Arkansas defeated Missouri 8-4 in the final home game of the regular season. The three-game set against LSU will begin in Baton Rouge on Saturday. And the Arkansas Razorback baseball team remains the unanimous number one team in the country after yesterday's polls were released. 30% chance of rain tonight, especially after midnight. Tomorrow, a 90% chance of rain or thunderstorms, highs between 74 and 80. Wednesday night, a 100% chance of more rain, lows in the lower 60s. This is Ozarks at Large. The Honors College at the University of Arkansas will host a two-week series of classes devoted to the race to develop, distribute, and administer vaccines to battle COVID-19. These classes will be led by different instructors each day and cover topics from science to politics to equity. The first session, May 10th, will be led by three University of Arkansas professors, Grant Ravi and Casey Harris, associate professors of sociology and criminology, and our first guest on today's show, Kevin Fitzpatrick, university professor of sociology and criminology and Jones Chair in Community at the U of A. We talked with Kevin Fitzpatrick via Zoom yesterday. He says the May 10th forum, titled Social Justice and Vaccine Distribution, will cover as much as possible about inequality and how that translates into health disparities, and how this particular issue as it relates to vaccine distribution is an expression of those health disparities.
Really, the goal is to just give them a 10,000-foot snapshot of inequality and its role in this distribution, but you know, look at some of the other issues that have played a part in determining whether or not people get vaccinated.
So there's this macro look and this micro look. Let me ask you about the micro part, which is these vaccines that are available. We've only been distributing and vaccinating for a couple of months, right? Two, 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months.
Can you, as a sociologist, are there things that can be determined about this rollout and this vaccination process that sort of go in line with the medical disparities and injustice that is involved in medical care?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most recent case that we have to look at here in the U.S. at somewhat of a similar scale, but obviously not as big, would be the H1N1 pandemic. Now, we saw some very similar things, and historically, I believe that it wouldn't matter how far back we went when it would come to really any kind of pandemic or response to a public health crisis, the disparities rises to the top. Now, at the same time, we know that while access to care and access ultimately to the vaccine is a driver and it is systemic, we know that there are individuals who are making choices not to participate. You know, and that's kind of quirky. Sometimes it goes along gender lines. Sometimes it goes along age lines. Sometimes it goes along race and ethnicity lines. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes that is in part a function of trust. Trust in the medical system that has been untrustworthy in the past, and trust in a political system that has also been somewhat untrustworthy in the past as well. So I think that there's a combination of those factors that really make this a complicated story. I don't think it's just, oh, well, systemic racism, there you go, that explains it all, or I'm just not interested and I'm not going to, you know, I have no intent to vaccinate. I think it's a combination of a lot of factors.
There's also, I guess, the approach to give information. I know that early in Arkansas's first surge, Northwest Arkansas, we saw populations that maybe English was not the primary language spoken at home. And then you dig just a little bit deeper and you find out that the messaging, the information was not as available in those languages. So can that play a part as well in medical care?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and yes, I mean, I think that what we've seen, and actually, if you look carefully at the communications literature and how messaging takes place during a natural disaster, what oftentimes happens is that those people where English is the second language are the last to hear about it, and oftentimes, potentially because of where they live and who they are at greatest risk to experience that disaster in a different way than the general population would. And I think that's also true here, particularly for, you know, and I think we saw it, as you mentioned, early on with the Marshallese. You know, look at how high the case reporting was among that population, and even the death rate early on when the messaging was either absent or incomplete. And so I think that that is another layer to the issue about who's at risk and what can we do to help mitigate that risk.
I know as you and I speak, the state of Arkansas is making a renewed effort to try to get vaccines to more rural counties where there are fewer clinics, fewer pharmacies. Yeah. And often rural and especially poor people in rural communities have a harder time getting access to medicine or vaccinations. And we've seen that in play here too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. And originally, you know, we talk a lot about communities of color, but really it's the intersection of those communities of color and lower SES and where they are, rural versus urban. You know, I mean, it's an intersection of several factors that are creating this lack of access or difficulty in gaining access. I think in a lot of the more rural states, we're going to have a really difficult time reaching herd immunity, because unless we totally flip the way in which we deliver medicine, in this case the vaccine, it's really going to, you know, I mean, it's going to be hard to imagine that even if you think you're setting up locations for distribution that are maybe central, they really aren't. Mm. You know, I mean, look at how difficult it is to move people from point A to point B once we get out of the metro area. And so you could maybe think that you have a central location and you find that not a lot of people are showing up. Well, the reason why is because they don't have a way to get there. Or there's no clear communication as to how to get there or you know, when, et cetera. As you said before, you know, the communication system is somewhat fractured the further out we go from the central core, which I think means that the most effective way is to take it directly to the community, to places where there is both a high degree of trust as well as a significant access point. The church, Sunday after service. You know, I mean, the rural church remains probably, between that and the hardware store, remain the central social hub. And we have to be creative, because that may be white rural America, but Black inner city means something different than Latinx suburbs. So I think that again, we need to be reminded that the place really matters here, and that we ought to be thinking about strategies that coincide with the limitations and or the parameters of those places.
Place matters. It sounds to me like you're also saying representation matters. If you do talk to people who might be in a rural county or in a community that English is the second language, communication, not just when a pandemic happens, but throughout a year, throughout society, that representation can take care, not take care, but help take care of some of these problems that arise.
I think that you're speaking to an issue that continues to sort of befuddle policymakers and even healthcare workers when it comes to delivering care. I believe that it, you know, again, if we only rely on strategies new or renewed during a crisis, then it becomes this roller coaster experience for the resident, where it would be much better if we were prepared. You know, I mean, I think that's the key. We lack preparedness when it comes to responding. I mean, there's no better example than than the rollout of this vaccine. Look what happened. I mean, we rolled out a vaccine. We were ready to be vaccinated, and there wasn't any infrastructure in place to do it. Now, you could blame, you know, the prior administration and them dragging their feet. Of course, that probably had something to do with it. But look how long it took us to ramp up. I mean, in that short period of time, tens of thousands of people died as a result. So we got to be, I think we got to do a little bit better preparedness. And, you know, my work with Hurricane Harvey is I see the same thing. You know, we keep making the same mistake. We can't have another Harvey mistake. We just cannot. Not in the 21st century.
Taking Hurricane Harvey, taking this pandemic, we better learn something. The costs have been so high in human life and jobs and well-being. We've got to learn from these, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, can't I flip that around and say, why aren't we doing a better job of learning?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Katrina. And I mean, look what happened as a result of that. Much of what happened in Harvey was a mirror image of Katrina. Now, thankfully, not as many people lost their life in Harvey as they did in Katrina. But it was extraordinarily expensive, enormous amounts of damage. The same kinds of people were experiencing, you know, the brunt of that, both on the front and on the back end of the storm. But it's no different than what happened in, you know, Florida, and what happened in Puerto Rico, and then swing back around and go look at what happened in Louisiana. You know, I mean, it is the same thing. But again, I believe that it's about equity. I don't think I'd go as far as to say that we have a design that approaches disaster preparedness that's unequal. But I got to say that depending on where you live and who you are, I'm sorry, but you are a greater risk to lose everything and possibly your life than a whole lot of other people would be.
Kevin Fitzpatrick, University Professor of Sociology and Criminology and Jones Chair in Community at the University of Arkansas, will be one of three U of A instructors for the first session in a two-week forum hosted by the University of Arkansas Honors College about the virus vaccines. The forum begins May 10th. We'll have more conversations with instructors scheduled to lead sessions over the next few weeks on Ozarks at Large. Each session is going to be recorded and then will be available to the public as well. And you can learn much more about the sessions at the website honorscollege.uark.edu. We also will have a direct link to that website that you can use at ozarksatlarge.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by American Shaman Kava Bar, featuring local craft beers and organic kava drinks in a family-friendly atmosphere. Coming soon, the Shaman Rec Room, offering ping pong, pool, and darts. Inspired and designed by locals in downtown Fayetteville. AmericanShamanKavaBar.com for more.
Development in Northwest Arkansas continues to be on the rise, especially in Bentonville. Bentonville was ranked by the U.S. Census Bureau as the fifth fastest growing city in the nation in 2019. But with that development, of course, come some problems. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth explains how one of Bentonville's newest attractions is trying to handle those growing pains.
Springtime Saturday afternoons in the Ozarks can call for sunshine, wide open spaces, bike rides, and traffic jams. At least that's what some visitors are noticing at one of the region's newest attractions, the Kohler Mountain Bike Preserve. The 400-acre conservation and recreation area rests on the edge of the Bentonville city limit and sits next to the Angel Falls neighborhood. Earlier this year, as more people began discovering the bike preserve, Lori Reed says cars started piling up along Camp Drive near the site's north entrance.
You know, this is a
an easement access for Angel Falls neighborhood, and it's very close, you know, to Walton. It's how most people traffic through Pumpkin Hollow, Peach Orchard. They, you know, get to places through Angel Falls or through camp. And when we have parallel parking all along this road, it creates this pinch point in the corner, and bigger vehicles, emergency vehicles, you know, fire trucks, heaven forbid there's something that happens, that there's an emergency, you know, it's impassable. And that's what we're trying to convey, is that this is a safety issue. I know you want to go to Kohler. I know you want to see all the amazing trails and ride your bikes, but let's park appropriately in it and make sure that the road is still passable. So this is our biggest physical constraint, is this area right here.
Reed is the site manager for Kohler, which is owned and managed by the Peel Compton Foundation. She says the parking issue is related to a growing demand.
You know, in the inception of Kohler, it was supposed to be, you know, this amazing outdoor gym that you walk to, hike to, ride to, bike to, anything to get here. And as the preserve has grown and the demand for outdoor space, you know, I'm sure that people just feel they need to have a better connection with nature through COVID, and we've seen just an exponential amount of people out here. And I think that with that comes the natural issue with a small town, is where are you parking people? Like, there's just not enough space for us to create parking lots, and we also don't want to do that. We want to conserve as much green space that we can.
She says some neighbors close to the preserve complained and even started putting up designated no parking signs along the street.
Yeah, obviously we want to be good neighbors. We don't want the folks living in and around Angel Falls or Pumpkin Hollow or some of the other neighborhoods close by to feel like we're creating a physical burden for them and that we're making streets impassable. So it starts with education, you know, letting them know, hey, this is an issue and we're aware that it's an issue, and we want to sort it out. We want to find solutions that are safe and that make sense. And that starts with, we're talking to people at the city, we're talking to people at the county, we're talking to our stakeholders. We're trying to figure out what we can do. We're marketing. We're creating cool discounts at Airship to encourage people. So there's a lot of things going on. And I think just having conversations goes a long way with neighbors, letting them know that it's not something that we're ignoring and that we're absolutely hearing it and working through it.
She also says parking and traffic issues are something Peel Compton's other sites are dealing with, too. The foundation is opening the 55-acre Osage Park on I Street in Bentonville later this summer.
As Bentonville grows and the amount of people that have moved here just continues to multiply year over year, parking will become more and more of an issue, I think, around the city as a whole. So I imagine, you know, some of our other properties are probably feeling that with all the construction that's going on and road closures. And I'm not directly involved, but I know that they're also feeling that pressure as well. You know, where are we going to put the people that want to be outside? How do we get them here?
And it's a theme that Bentonville residents are pretty familiar with by now. Data from the city shows an estimated population of nearly 100,000 people by 2040. Dennis Burge, Bentonville's transportation director, says the city is working to improve traffic conditions and meet growing population demand. And earlier this month, residents overwhelmingly approved a bond measure that would allot $173.5 million for street improvements across the city. But in the meantime, Lori Reed says Kohler is looking for ways to redirect visitors.
Yes, so we are thinking of options that we have on property that we already own. Obviously, you know, Kohler's almost 400 acres, it's about 387 acres, and we're restricted by topography. So we're in this valley. It's pretty difficult to build parking lots in flood spaces. It's difficult to get permits. So we're looking at spaces that already exist to put conditional temporary parking, one being the Grove. So a lot of folks don't know that the Kohler Grove is the newest addition. It's our educational pavilion. It's where we have our green space. It's where we put on programming here at Kohler, and we're looking at that space to add some additional parking, about 46 more spots. And then we're looking, you know, in the surrounding areas for properties that are close by that might allow us to use their property for overflow parking on the weekends. We're also looking at Camp Drive as an option for parallel parking because we do own a portion of that road. So we're doing what we can to figure out those constraints. It's just a work in progress, and it's going to take time and education.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Mommy says, get over,
that's the side that I need. And Daniel Carruth reports from the Karen Taha News Studio at KUAF. The Arkansas General Assembly is reaching the end of its current gathering, though not adjourning, but going into extended recess. Lawmakers will return later this year to tackle redistricting. During the session, legislators selected three proposed constitutional amendments for voters to consider in November 2022. When John Brummett, political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, met for their weekly discussion yesterday, a third amendment had not officially been referred. But the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment did earn lawmakers' approval for the ballot after the conversation was recorded. John and Roby discussed those proposed amendments, but they also talked about the nearly completed session. Roby asked John Brummett what his takeaways are from the session.
Well, positively, for those who want to look at it positively, it is the consummation of the conservative takeover of Arkansas. This was the session in which the very conservative legislature came into maturity and asserted its conservative philosophy. No matter what the governor, who was not conservative enough, thought. From my view and from other negative views, it's been largely a catastrophe and a mean-spirited, petty, impractical, philosophically zealous session that has set the state back. I go with the latter, but there are those who like it, and this is their time. They've got it. They've won the elections. And the legislature darn sure exercised the spoils of victory in this session.
So we do know that there's going to be a couple constitutional amendments referred. I guess just to set you up with a T-ball and in Little League, which one are you most looking forward to voting against?
I am looking forward most to voting against. Well, wait a minute. Do we know what the third one is? Is
that the we haven't seen the third one make its way through yet. So,
well, yeah, but that probably gives a state right of religious freedom,
correct?
Which already exists. I would look forward to voting against that. But of the two we know of, the amendment to allow the legislature to call itself into special session, I will gladly vote against. Anxiously vote against. It would be my most enjoyable no vote. The concept isn't horrible. Many states have allowed the legislature is allowed to call themselves into session in one form or another, by a vote or a suspension of the rules or by its leadership. But Arkansas is a state where the governor only gets governor can be overridden by a simple majority of the vote, thus creating an imbalance of power on making laws. One advantage the governor has in trying to keep a little bit of balance is when the legislature goes home, they can't come back on their own call. He runs the state as the chief executive. And I might someday go for a pair. I'd go put these two things together, raise the veto to 67 and call yourselves into session. But I'd have to think about that at the time. The other, there's a legislative power play going on here. These guys are really, really fired up about their new power and their new maturity and having been down here a few years. And they're going to say that voters will not approve constitutional amendments, whether referred or initiated, and initiated acts also affected cannot be passed without a 60% majority of the people at the electorate. I'll also look forward to voting against that, even though the concept is good. Sometimes you have to rise above concept. Sometimes you have to rise above principle, even. And the principle of evaluating a constitutional amendment to require an extraordinary vote is a sound one that I've advocated before. It's as simple as I don't want these guys to be able to make laws by 50% when the people will be removed of their ability to do so by a simple majority and required to do extraordinary. I think there may be great need in this state for the people to make their own laws in the face of some of what we see at this legislature.
What will be the voting percentage needed to make it 60% to pass a constitutional amendment?
What do you mean, what will be the voting percentage? It'd be 60%.
No, what will need to be passed to get it to 60%?
Yes, this is a point that some have made. I think it's unfair, but it's interesting. this amendment to be referred to say it takes 60% to pass any future amendment would itself be a constitutional amendment that would be passed by a mere 50%. Is that what you're wanting me to say?
I was getting at, yes.
So there are many saying, well, you ought to require that 60% be required on this one if the point of it is to make 60% the requisite otherwise. Of course, you cannot go beyond the existing Constitution and say, we're going to voluntarily decide that this only becomes law by 60%. So I find that an interesting observation and a nice rhetorical point, but not exactly fair or appropriate to this argument.
All right. You said earlier you had a problem with religious freedom. What's your problem with religious freedom if that one winds up?
We got religious freedom. You know, the U.S. Constitution has a Bill of Rights, and people have freedom to be religious as they choose, or they have the freedom not to be religious. We fought this battle between religious freedom, getting in touch with people's right to discriminate based on religion. We fought it. We got a statute that we hammered out a few years ago. It's been fought at the federal level. Apparently, this amendment would make clear that in Arkansas, you would have a state right of religious freedom, which would allow you
pray harder, John. Pray harder.
Or exercise your religion in a way that couldn't be called illegal or discriminatory. Whereas existing statute tries to arrive at some balance there. So I think that's a rampant thing. And, it's something like that on the ballot. Free religion, I give that one very high chance of passage if the people get a chance to vote for freedom of religion, which they already have fully and should have, thank goodness.
And to be fair, that is also a potential amendment that drives out voter turnout in a firm conservative basis as well. Not that it's necessarily needed in a highly Republican state like Arkansas, but it would certainly benefit Republicans in terms of the conservative vote there. Last question for you here. Governor Asa Hutchinson and the legislative leadership held a press conference at the tail end of last week to really talk about some of the successes of the session, right, particularly on the fiscal front there. What can you point to as having been successful? What will the governor brag about? What do you think he should brag about in this legislative session?
I'll tell you one thing he bragged about the other day. I sent him a message about something and he sent back an answer to that. But he also said, I believe you predicted we weren't going to pass the Medicaid expansion. And I sent back, I don't know what you're talking about. But I did suggest there would be difficulty in getting this uncommonly right-wing legislature to arrive at the usual three-fourths vote to continue the Arkansas Works or Arkansas, whatever it is now. What is it? Arkansas Home?
And it was difficult. It took them 5 tries to get it through.
It took them 5, but they got it done, and he was so pleased that they got done, because if that doesn't get done, we got health care funding crisis across rural Arkansas at the Med Center, and the budget falls apart. So he was chortling a little bit. The budget is sound. It produces, we inherit a nice surplus. Some bills that he wanted, I can't enumerate them now because he didn't have a high-profile agenda, because the high-profile agenda was the legislature's. But he can accurately say, and let me put it in my words, hey, the stuff I had to have done administratively to do my job, we got it done. Wipe our brow, we got it done. And the other stuff, you know, that's something else. But the central things that we wanted to keep this state on track, from our point of view, we got them done. And without any major blowups. And, you know, he had to give on his emergency powers and the process by which he does those sorts of things. So he can say, I went through this minefield and I'm still alive. Now, the celebration that we got everything done the state needed to have done is belied by bad national publicity and bad national image resulting from the extreme hateful conservatism of some of the measures that he allowed to become law, or that became law in one case, despite his veto.
John Brummett is a political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can find his columns at arkansasonline.com. He spoke with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can find more from the conversation at talkbusiness.net. This is Ozarks at Large, and that is brand new music from Daryl Shawn, the man who wrote and performs our theme song. His new single is titled Still Here. You can find it online right now, wherever you find your music online. Daryl, by the way, provides free micro concerts each weekday around 4 o'clock our time at his Facebook and Instagram feeds. The Art Experience in Fayetteville is seeking nurses to participate in a free online mask-making group experience called The Face of COVID, Finding Clarity Through Creativity. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met with Art Experience Director Joanne Kaminsky to bring us the details.
Jackson, a therapy dog, patrols the backyard of the Kaminsky household this chill evening for nuisance deer. Inside, Joanne Kaminsky takes a seat at the kitchen table, a wood stove warming the room, to talk about how she wishes to serve nurses who have or are serving on the front line of the pandemic.
I just feel for them. I've worked with so many folks who have had various trauma.
Kaminsky is founder of the nonprofit Art Experience Center for Art Therapy and Creativity for Children and Adults. She's a licensed counselor with a master's in education, as well as a registered board-certified art therapist and play therapist. With the Bridge Fund grant awarded by the Creative Arkansas Community Hub and Exchange, CASH for short, at the Northwest Arkansas Council, she's facilitating a month-long series of virtual creative encounter groups for nurses.
We believe that nurses anywhere have been affected by COVID. Nurses in the schools, nurses in the ICUs, nurses at the VA. We're thinking that this is going to take us all a long time to get over. We all know about trauma. The three therapists who are working on this have specifically worked with trauma.
Meaning herself, as well as board-certified art therapist Dreema Phoenix and expressive arts therapist Lauren Levine. They're reaching out to medical institutions in the region seeking nurses who may be suffering with what she calls vicarious trauma.
If you can imagine being in a place where people are dying and you cannot keep them alive, where you are doing everything that you can, but you're overloaded and it's going on for months and months and months.
During the worst of the pandemic this winter, intensive care COVID-19 units were full, with case and death counts rising daily. The pandemic is easing now with a third of Arkansans vaccinated for COVID, but frontline nurses in particular are suffering collateral damage. Kaminsky is inviting nurses to meet four times for an hour and a half each, engaging in a creative process designed to release distress and promote healing.
Yes, so it's all confidential, it's all secure. Now, we're offering this as a psychoeducational experience, not a therapy experience, but we are all therapists, and so we're going to bring that element just naturally as we do. And people can be involved as they want to. If they don't want to talk, and this is kind of always the rule, you get to share as much or as little as you want to.
The days and times will be coordinated by each of the three therapists with small groups of nurse enrollees. Art materials will be delivered to nurses' homes or workplaces free of charge.
Well, we are making masks. We don't know yet what's going to happen when we come to the end. The process in art therapy and expressive art therapy, the process is the most important part. The product, that's going to happen. We'll have masks. the process is the healing part.
To learn more and to enroll, search the Our Groups tab on the Art Experience homepage. We've posted a direct link on our news site as well. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Quick reminder that people in Oklahoma who were affected by winter storms this year now have less than a month to register for disaster assistance from FEMA. Registration deadline is May 25th. This covers 16 counties in central and eastern Oklahoma. For more information or to register for assistance from FEMA, you can go to disasterassistance.gov. You can call the FEMA helpline at 800-621-3362. And if you don't have access to the internet, you can visit a local library to register or send documentations to FEMA.
The Central Arkansas Library presents author and cultural critic Roxane Gay Thursday, April 29th at 6:30 p.m. Gay, the first black woman to write for a Marvel comic series, is the author of Bad Feminist, An Untamed State, and Hunger, A Memoir of My Body. This virtual event is free and open to the public. CALS.org for more.
This is Ozarks at Large with me on a cloudy but warmish day. On the front porch is our militant grammarian, Catherine Shields. Welcome back.
Thank you. Kyle, I know how old I am, but of course, since it's applied to me, I don't think of 73 as old.
I don't either, no.
It's just when I realize how many grammar battles I've lost that I start to feel my age. Kyle, what does presently mean?
Now.
That's what everybody says.
Uh-oh. It sounds like I'm on the winning side
on
this one.
No, that's what everybody says. It's one of the concessions I had to make in accepting that the word presently could mean now. It doesn't. It means soon.
But that makes no sense to my ears.
Doesn't
matter, does it?
You're speaking English. What
so
do you want?
Presently, the governor will speak means he's about to come out.
Exactly.
Okay. Speaking of which.
Yes.
I have noticed during the pandemic, many poor people getting understanding the difference between podium and lectern.
Really?
Like, the governor's behind the lectern. Because the podium, everybody's up on a podium. And a lectern is something you stand behind. I've just seen.
That's amazing.
Because I think so many lecterns are being seen every day. Go ahead.
Okay.
But I miss presently.
I was so excited when I got my first Black's Law Dictionary. I immediately went to presently, assured that as a legal term, it would mean soon. Nope. There in black and white was the definition of presently, now.
Now. I'm telling you, it just makes more sense. But anyway.
So I want to talk about some of the other wrong, yes, I said it wrong.
This will be fun.
Uses of words that I have come to realize are irredeemable.
Okay.
Kyle, what's the difference between the words reluctant and reticent? These days, there's no difference, but
all right.
What's supposed to be.
All right. Reluctant, something you don't want to do. Reticent, I don't think it has to do with desire. It's more about behavior. Okay.
It's about speaking.
That, I would have gotten there eventually.
Well, we don't have all day.
Yes, exactly. And all night. Okay.
Someone who is reluctant is generally unwilling or disinclined to do something. Someone who is reticent is unwilling or reluctant to speak.
Right, I was going to get there.
Or is someone who prefers to keep quiet instead of sharing information. A reticent person would never be accused of TMI. Too much information.
Yeah, right. I'm just thinking that, you know, no one's ever going to. I don't think I'm guilty of TMI, but I've never really been thought of as reticent either. I talk a lot.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think you are. But even Merriam-Webster is against me here in wanting to preserve the difference. It says when reticent means reluctant or hesitant today, it often does so in the context of reluctant communication of one kind or another. Mm. That use is fully established, though, for other contexts, too. And I hear it in all contexts. I don't hear the word reluctant ever.
No.
The president was reticent to call
you're right.
The Congress or whatever, you know. Hate it. Okay, these next two misuses go together in that to use them correctly, one only has to count.
Okay.
Fill in the blanks here.
Uh-huh.
Jenny had blank pets than me, but she had blank time to tend to them.
Fewer pets because pets can be counted, and time is less because it can't be counted by one, two, three.
Yeah.
It's an
abstract
concept.
Right. Mm-hmm. The rule is that if you can count them, use fewer. If you can't, as in a bulk amount or an abstract idea such as time, use less.
Yeah.
But fewer is a word destined for the junkyard.
I know. And here I'm with you. Here I'm with you. I this one grates on my nerves.
Yeah, me too. Now, the same rule applies to this pair, fill in the blank. The blank of times I have to let my dog out is leading to a huge blank of wasted time.
Number of times, because you can count it, an amount for the abstract.
How
an amount of soup with a number of spoons.
Right. Yeah. So it's I've used the same word, although one's plural.
Right.
Times.
Right.
So you can count times.
Right.
But time is abstract.
Right.
And you can't count it. Yeah. just as before, number applies to things you can count, as in times, and amount is for uncountable things, such as time. And these days, it's amount for everything, in the amount of pencils on my desk.
Yeah.
I've also given up on the fight on a spelling error because I hardly ever see it used correctly. How do you spell all right, as in it's all right with me?
A-L-R-I-G-H-T.
That's the wrong noun.
So it should be A-L-L space R-I-G-H-T?
Right. Yeah.
So all right isn't a word?
No, it is not. Hmm. I think some of it may come from the pair of words already one word and already two words.
Yeah.
We're all ready to go,
right.
Which is A-L-L space R-E-A-D-Y.
Right.
Or I've already done that, and that's just one L.
I mean, it's interesting because the answers are all right. I wouldn't ever go A-L-R-I-G-H-T because that definitely two. That seems like
You're counting the answers.
Yeah,
yeah.
But all right, like, you know, all right, all right.
She's
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's all right.
Yeah. That seems like it should be A-L, but it's not.
Not.
Okay. All right.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to admit that I'm old, or at least I am holding on to old ways. But you'll never hear me say, "She gifted me some seeds."
No, I'm with you there.
Even though people have been using it that way for 400 years.
Oh, I was going to say it's not needed, but apparently, well, puts me in my place. Okay. Is that it?
Yep.
All right, gifting us with her presence presently is our militant grammarian, Catherine Shirls. Thanks, Catherine. Tomorrow, on a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large, property owners who fail to submit information by Friday to Fayetteville's Landlords Representative Registry will be subject to fine.
We send them a violation letter, which gives them about 7 days to get registered or have their representative register themselves. If they still don't take action, they can potentially go to our city's prosecuting attorney. And from there, worst case scenario, it could potentially be levied fines of up to $250 a day.
Details to that story and much more on Ozarks at Large. Also tomorrow, highlights from today's weekly briefing with Governor Asa Hutchinson and state officials regarding Arkansas and COVID-19. A brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. And don't forget, we do have the KUAF Ozarks at Large daily email newsletter. Arrives in your email inbox every weekday afternoon with a list of what was on the show that day, direct links to take you to those stories and interviews, and much more. To sign up, just go to KUAF.com. It's 100% free.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. A few years ago, a group of friends formed a nonprofit called Morning Coffee in hopes of raising funding for Fayetteville artist and craftsman Jimmy Glenn to create what is called the Stone Altar. Phase one of the project was unveiled in June of 2019. Now the group is wanting to begin phase two, which Jimmy says will afford more opportunities to those in our communities wanting to visit. I recently spoke with Jimmy on the Fayetteville Square.
So right now I'm starting phase two, which is a pavilion which will allow me to have handicap access built to come through the pavilion into the sculpture piece, and also an information board. I have a writing desk with note cards where you can write your note of whatever nature, and have your ceremony in a gorgeous steel bowl made by Eugene Sargent. But during the course of the pandemic, it was heavily used, but there was not a lot of people didn't have the concept of the ceremony, so this will be part of the information board that I will build into the pavilion. So that's where we are right now.
Jimmy says the idea of this ceremonial stone altar was born out of a trip he took to the Burning Man Festival in 2013. He says he found the closing ceremony to be a very powerful experience.
The inspiration for stone altar came from the temple at Burning Man, which the year I was there was a giant plywood pyramid there were magic markers everywhere. And during the course of the week of the festival, you would just write your note on the plywood, inside, outside, and it was totally full. And the temple was always the last structure to burn at Burning Man, and it was spectacular, and all 70,000 people in attendance were there, and it was cathartic, to say the least, powerfully emotional. I was trying to create the same emotion, but on a much smaller scale. So that's the concept with the note cards, the steel bowl, and plus it's in one of the prettiest little quiet spots in Fayetteville, along the trail, along the creek. So again, it was heavily used during the pandemic. I would go down to replenish the note cards, and there would be 100 cards in the box. And these folks were just not familiar with the ceremony. So if you were one of the folks who put a note in the box that said, "What is this place?" you're about to find out.
Jimmy Glenn and the rest of the nonprofit Morning Coffee are actively working on phase two at the stone altar. Again, that's going to include easier access for those with physical disabilities, a pavilion covering, as well as a description of the intended use of the stone altar. If you'd like to know more or how you can help out, stonealtar.art. That's stonealtar.art. The Community Spotlight and KUAF. Local matters.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Elkins. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Tuesday edition included Daniel Carruth, Jacqueline Froelich, and our militant grammarian, Catherine Shirlds. Timothy Dennis produced our show. Our conversations between John Brummett, political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics is part of our relationship with Talk Business and Politics. Additional content today came from our partners in public radio, KUAR in Little Rock. The Community Spotlight is produced by Pete Hartman. You can hear new editions every weekday morning at 6:30 and 8:30. You can also hear Ozarks at Large on your smart speaker, at least the most recent daily edition of Ozarks at Large. Just ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large. And you can subscribe to the podcast version of our show. It is absolutely free, and it is available for subscription through any of the major podcast distributors. You can always also go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com, find past shows, interviews, and stories. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Talk again soon.